Welcome to the Pit Podcast. Now, it has been a while since the last podcast I've shared with you. Things have been busy with the magazine, but I've bumped into a few of you over the last little while who've been telling me that you've been missing the podcast. So I've recorded this beautiful conversation I had with Amanda Reynolds, who is a Gurungai Yuin woman. And I went to her place on the south coast of New South Wales, had a wonderful conversation, which I can share with you. I'm really excited to share this with you. So if you want to find out more about Amanda too, there is a full profile article on her in issue 32 of Pit Magazine. And she's also written an article about connecting to country in that issue. So if you want to have a look at that, go to the website at www.pipmagazine.com.au. This has been recorded in her home, which is surrounded by nature, and you can hear the buzz of the cicadas and the wildlife outside. So if you're wondering what that noise is, it's just nature humming. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Today I'm here with Amanda Reynolds on Yuin Country at Barul Lake. Amanda is a Gurungai Yuin woman. She's an artist, storyteller, cloak maker, curator, and many things more. Thanks, Amanda, for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thank you, Robin. Hello, everyone out there.
So do you want to tell me a bit about where we are and your connection to this place?
Yeah, sure. So I'll just start with a small acknowledgement of the old people and country and of all the listeners as well. So, Goguyong, Naranguyong, Gobianya, Gobianya, Nyara, Goyuanji, Nyara. Goguyong, Naranguyong. Nāwa walama mujumuru. Amanda Nallery by Yuanji Gurungai Dharamalarganyum. Buruanya Nyara. 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 So I just paid my respects to the ancients, the ancestors, old men and old women here on country and on country wherever you are listening to us. I paid my respects to all the Yuin people and all the Yuin animals and plants, sky and ocean, and through our sacred possum cloak drumming, offered our heartbeat blessing. So that sound is a very humble sound of our possum cloak drumming, and it's our women's business, our Aboriginal women's business, is when we drum our possum cloaks, we're paying respect and honouring our mothers who birthed us and all the grandmothers of that sound that we heard that grew our spirit when we were in their womb. So when we drum for country or for family, we're opening that connection with Mother Earth and Father Sky. So that humble sound teaches us and reminds us to try and stay humble as we walk, live, talk on Mother Earth. So I want to thank you all for listening to this story today, because the old people teach us one of the greatest gifts you can give to someone is to listen. And that gift, I'm hoping we all can continue to give to country, because our country needs us to learn to listen and keep learning to listen and then listen deeper. Thank you.
Thank you. That's really beautiful. Now, do you want to tell me a bit about this possum skin that you've got here and your role as the cloak maker and how that became your role and what that means? And maybe, because we're just listening, describe this cloak and what it looks like and how you've decorated it.
Yeah, sure. So my journey with possum cloaks began in my late 20s, and I didn't actually ever think I'd be able to make cloaks myself because of disruptions in family, or I was just called, I was doing more curatorial work, and I had met and was inspired by some women in Victoria who were tasked by the old people with bringing possum skin cloaks back into daily life in our communities. So for many years I was just doing the support role, curating, storytelling, organising and helping support the vision of initially Vicky Cousins and her sister Deborah and Trina Hamm and Lee Durrock, and with a group of elders who supported them. And then that grew and more people joined, and through Banmira Arts, you know, more people were involved in that, and that's sort of been almost three decades now of being part of that collective. And then there came a time when I moved back here and went, I've got to, just the dreaming came through, you know, and the encouragement as well. And once that happened, there was no stopping me. You know, for years I'd helped and travelled all over the southeast, you know, doing workshops, encouraging, showing, working with the kids, helping the senior cloak teachers doing the teaching, and then bang, when my dreaming came through, my designs and connections.
What does that mean, when your dreaming came through?
Well, I felt more confident that I'd learned enough and listened enough and had enough connections, but also on a deeply spiritual level, having the confidence to open my spirit to use my work to carry the teachings of the ancestors. So the way Vicky would talk about it is the ancestral memory ignites inside you. And other elders have spoken about it differently, you know, like the late Uncle Max Harrison used, you know, in his book he talks about, and he used to sit and talk with me about this as well, about, you know, the DNA and the blood activating, and then your memory comes through that. And certainly while that's been present throughout my life, the strength of how that unfolded in my mid to late 30s was on another level of intensity I didn't even really know was possible. And so sometimes the act of doing, you know, I think I'd be sitting down to draw this tree here, you know, or do the story about this, and totally different. The tree would give me teachings that connected the whole totem system, and then I'd go and show the elders and they'd go, oh, that's the network, that's the kin network right there, you know, what's come through. And that's because I had gone into a sort of meditative state in doing that. So it works the best for me with possum. I do a little bit of wood with carving, you know, and some tree bark and digging sticks and things like that, and I really enjoy that as well, because you connect with the spirit of either the possum pelt or the tree. But so I make these, and you know, some people may have seen the big cloaks that wrap around you like a queen size blanket, you know.
Yeah.
But we also have a lot of body adornments, and you know, being from Sydney and the coast, sometimes we need those big warm cloaks, and sometimes we need smaller little ones, and we use a lot of the cloaks in body adornments, and the design feature is really one of our traditional forms of writing. So you often hear people say that we don't have writing, but our writing is the symbols and designs, sort of like hieroglyphics, you know, would communicate like emojis do today, the importance of culturally known stories and designs and emblems. And there's a lot of cultural protocols around this before copyright and before all of those Western traditions within culture, you know, certain families and clans, you know, might be able to paint and tell or design these stories, and others have others that they belong to. And so that process of learning from elders and listening and learning from country, and then also connecting with your own dreaming and stories, is all part of what it means to live a way of life and to be committed to something. So my dance with the possum cloaks has been going for almost 3 decades and I love the possum, you know, like I don't work with roo or wallaby because I've got you know, totemic or clan relationships with them where I don't work with those skins, but I work with the possum skin, and it's like a protector for me, but I love and adore the possum. And this particular pelts that I drummed for you today has, it's a two pelt sort of like a shoulder sash. And on one design, it has part of a story of the scribbly gum tree with giant roots going down into the earth.
Look like legs.
And we'll take a photo of this later for people who want to
we'll
go
have
on,
it on the website.
Sorry, I'm doing your job for you there, Robin. And on the other side is what I call, and you know, so I with the scribbly gum, I call that my mother's father in a sort of a relationship system. And on the other side, I've got the turpie tree, the giant turpie tree, and I call that my father's father in terms of relationships. And there's a lot of other little animals and plants all intertwined with those designs there.
And do you want to talk through like how, so these images are sort of burnt on? Do you want to explain?
So these, the method that I've used using modern tools is with the poker burner or wood burner. And I've burned some designs, and then I've used ochres and bush glue to also put some colours on it as well. And I've twined feathers.
And what feathers are they?
So we've got emu feathers on one side. So
beautiful.
For Marea Wumarawara. So that's sky emu this time of year round, coming in, that we're coming into March, April's a really important women's business side activities for possum cloaks, because we're mending our cloaks, we're getting ready for winter.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But also it's when we gather and sing up the sky emu as she travels from east to west. And again, you know, part of our systems on the other side, this side, where I've got the yellow-crested cockatoo feather, garea. So that activates for me more in the spring, you know, so the sky, you know, we're coming back out into our springtime.
Yeah.
And it connects with the Milky Way in a different way, but it's also acknowledging the west, the setting sun in the west, but also that which comes from the west into country there. And it's a different relationship. So for me, that's how it works. For other people, it'd work very differently, because we all have different grandparents, and even though we might be of the same nation with our old family and marriage and totem systems, we have different sets of relations to other mobs, other human beings, but also all of the species that belong on country.
Mm.
And it's one of the beauties of traditional culture is how that is also a conservation system.
Mm.
So our spiritual, scientific, creative, you know, environmental, all of the sciences and humanities that you might find in a university are integrated into the philosophies of how to live a life.
Mm.
And for me, possum cloaks is one of my main things. And part of the reason it's really important for me is to acknowledge the possum as a teacher. So to work with something, to have the right, you know, an animal has to die to make a cloak. And the possum, the humble possum, clothed and fed our people for thousands of generations.
Mm.
And in the 1800s, it was taken over to New Zealand to start a fur trade, just like many species have brought into Australia, and some of them are environmental disasters in our country.
Yeah.
The possum, through no fault of its own, got taken to New Zealand, to Aotearoa, and has created an environmental disaster for them. They don't have the natural predator. So part of making and working with cloaks that we return home from country is about having access to the material, but importantly it's also about taking responsibility. So you hear a lot about the rights to do something or the rights to do this, but we also have responsibilities in this system of relationships.
Yeah.
That if something's too far out of balance, or if something's doing something where it doesn't belong, or if we need the natural world order is being disturbed, that you have responsibility. So the responsibility is also, that possum is creating all this harm to all of those native species and bush and forest over in Aotearoa because it just loves it there and is flourishing.
Yeah.
And then we get the best pelts and fur from there. But they hate it.
Mm.
They call it a pest. And so in 2010, actually, for several years I'd been dreaming that we had to make this gift cloak to give to the Māori people of Aotearoa to acknowledge and take responsibility.
Mm.
And we spoke with some Māori people, and I spoke with Vicky and Lee and Marie and Brian and others with Bamira, and kept this dream. I kept having it get louder and louder and louder over those years that we have to create this gift. And then Lee started having the same dream, similar dream, slightly different dream. And we decided, yes, so we reached out and offered to gift a cloak, and we were given advice that it would be good to give it to Papa. Because they have a national marae there, and different elders of different iwi take turns to be elders in residence there. And so we reached out to ask them, would they accept this gift to acknowledge the possum that they only know as a pest, but that we wanted to restore its dignity. And we wanted, you know, we were cloak makers, that us importing pelts for the last 20 years, you know, and running workshops with thousands of Aboriginal people who are heirs of the cloak making tradition in the southeast, had sustained this revitalization of one of our sacred cultural practices and everyday practices, and would they accept it? So we went over and did the ceremony, and they accepted the cloak on behalf, half of that, and then when we came back, I sat out on my veranda to make small little drums because I'd always done the possum drumming, and I wanted to make gifts for my main teachers, you know, because they'd made me put designs on that cloak, and I'd always said, oh, I'm no artist, I'm not good enough. And in organising that gift and doing that, I think the possum was happy because that's was like there was no end to me making cloaks, like just on another level, like couldn't stop, you know. And the designs, like I just sit down and get overtaken. But when I made those little possums and I made a blessing and having the confidence to speak language that I didn't grow up speaking or learn, and to stay humble, to know that you'll make mistakes on your journey and learn lessons, but to stay focused on, you know, we've got a responsibility for this animal, and then we have the right to make the cloak. And then what are the teachings? And there are teachings that different communities and families have, but there are also teachings that we have to hold in this modern world where we can go to the shops and buy most things, is to slow us right down and to remember the cycles of life, death and rebirth, and to remember and stay connected through that heartbeat sound, which is our sacred ceremony sound that our women do. While cloaks are for men, women and children in our communities, it's only our women who do the ceremonial drumming with possum. To slow us down, to remember that heartbeat sound. And so there's a little blessing. Let the soles of your feet walk your mother's heartbeat. Let the words you speak be your gift of peace. So to slow us down, a talker like me. Start drumming to return to that connection to our mother. So for us, we all have connections and ancestral connections, and many of my ancestors are also came as convicts in that those early ships that came into Sydney. You know, so to be connected as an Aboriginal woman or person for thousands of generations here, and then we know there's many people who have come from all over the world, and also I have found that there are many traditional cultures or ancient cultures who have different traditions around their connection to Mother Earth or the Earth, and to ceremony or to drumming or to dancing, and into how to create those spaces of connection between the mind, body and the spirit, and how that involves a life dedicated to caring for country through their own systems. And that in this modern world, with the pressures we have of the pace of time going so quickly, there's the gift of technology that we're sharing today, that we're connecting with each other and we're not face to face, but we're somehow being able to get those signal connections, is actually what our ancients and old people held without digging up country, by singing and dancing at ceremonial sites. Understanding and knowing that we can sing into the stones, that the trees hold the memories, you know, that they're sentient beings, that all of the plants and animals, the waterways. And that's the gift. It's the gift of Aboriginal Australia taking care of this continent so beautifully for so many generations. And sometimes I've taken the cloaks into schools and worked with little primary kids, and I ask them that question. I talk to them about invasive species and species of belonging, and I ask the question, you know, can you tell me what's a species that belongs here, and what are some species that are invasive or a problem? And we talk about those things, and it's really interesting to see what some kids say. You know, it depends on where they're living and where they're growing up or what their family experiences are. Mm. You know, and I always laugh in a good way when some of the little kids say, humans are the invasive species. Because on some level, they're understanding how our way of life is not sustainable if we keep only on a certain path, and that we have to really, together collectively as people of Australia but as people of the world, look at our relationship with our resources and draw inspiration from ancient ways of connecting, but also some of the ways that modern technology can reduce the impact. And for me, that pace has to come into it, the pace of what we're doing. I'll just pause now to let you ask a question, Robin.
So talking about that connection to country, I mean, is that something that you have always inherently felt, or is that something that you've developed over time and over the years? And are there practices that you have, like slowing down? Or, I mean, where you live, if I can describe it to people who are listening, is just beautiful. It's completely and utterly surrounded by beautiful nature. I'm not sure if you can hear all the sounds of nature outside, but I think, yeah, understanding country and understanding where you live, and even the way previously Amanda was talking about the lake and the cycles, and understanding when it's a good time for things and when it's a good time not to do certain activities. I guess what I'm asking is, yeah, how do you have that connection to country, and how would you suggest maybe for other people who are looking to develop a deeper connection to country or their local place? What are some of the ways that you might suggest or that you do?
Well, I'm living here at Brill Lake. I was living at Conjola Lake for a while before the fires, and then I moved over here. I spent a lot of my childhood here. My dad spent a lot of his childhood here. Our family has a long connection to this part of the South Coast.
Mm.
Back and forth to Sydney. Different families have different patterns. And as a child, you know, I grew up swimming, fishing, prawning, water skiing.
Yeah.
You know, started off standing there. So a lot of my happiest fun outdoor times, you know, I've been able to eat all the food.
Mm.
And you know, have a lot of fun, be with other kids, all the cousins, we'd all just sleep, you know, take a, you know, all camp, sort of, they had the hut, they built a little garage so we could all put our mattresses down in the garage when it rained and stuff, and that was on the other side of, just around the corner, a couple of blocks away from here, I'm around the other side now.
Yeah.
So
I guess in that you're learning that, you know, when it's time to go prawning and when it's time for... To do those different things, and just getting that understanding quite young about knowing how to read time and seasons and the moon and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I think the important thing there was always the winds, what the winds are doing and what the tides are doing is really important. You know, people underestimate the power of the southerly when it comes through, and there were several times we had to go out and rescue, just on the lake, rescue people sailing or doing different things that didn't understand what it would mean on the lake, or didn't understand the power of the tidal pool and the where the deep canyons underneath the lake pull more strongly with the currents. So those sorts of things, you know, were really important.
The kookaburras just popped up outside. Yeah.
Yeah, and then in the bush. So the first tree I mourned, actually, as a little girl, I think I was about 7 or 8, I remember. My great great nan and coming round, and they were going to, they'd opened up some more of this little suburb. They were going to build some houses in this area where we're at the waterfall parts of the lake here. There's waterfalls on different areas of the lake, and build a new part of the road there. And they'd taken down a couple of what I call, today I call them ancestral giants. I didn't use that word when I was young. And one of the big trees I saw taken down, and I just cried and cried and cried. And I didn't understand that feeling when I was young. And I still see some of those trees, and I'd sort of forgotten that for many years. And I remember, you know, when I was young also, just seeing what was happening. You know, you'd see images of different practices when some industries, or they just clear fell the whole area to create new suburbs, not just here in Sydney, or some of the industries, you know, and the impact, being overwhelmed with an intensity of grief and trying to understand that in terms of also how you live a life, you know, of a modern life in balance, again, is about the pace and the integrating of what's renewable or not renewable, because as we know, the harvesting of resources is how one continues, but the management practices around that. And, you know, the pain when they used to net the lake, and my whole family would be enraged, you know, and like we'd spend the whole time like enraged. And even though the authorities might be saying, oh, this is allowed to happen, you know, we were like, you can't allow this to happen. There's no, you know, it's taking all the fish. This is the estuary, you know, we've got to allow the breeding cycles. So even those sorts of practices and their damaging, you know, and then there were no prawns to go prawning anymore, and then there was this, and
so how do you cope with that?
Yeah, so
grief and anger.
Well, the thing is, those things get learned either the easy way or the hard way, and so everyone suffers. But the thing that's most important is trying to shift a sense of responsibility that our non-human species have rights to flourish, for not just for human consumption. So that when I talked earlier in this interview about, you know, it's not just about our rights, it's about our responsibilities and why you're driven to do something, you know, in making cloaks, this deep desire within me is to return honour to that animal, and to showcase it as the magnificent teacher, the possum, this humble possum, as the magnificent teacher and carrier of stories. In that same way, when we think about our environmental management systems, both at a government policy level and as a what we do as everyday people, and the choices we make, and I mean the choices a lot of your listeners make, they're all into the themes that you're interested in with gardening and learning about healthier ways of nutritious living and eating and integrated lifestyle. How you can do that in your own small way, in your own footprint, and build communities around that, but then also how that advocacy at a political level can happen, because there's no choice for Aboriginal people since you know Philip planted the flag and everyone started coming, our job of teaching and sharing cultural traditions has to be for protecting and healing and recovering some of the injustices that our peoples face in all of the health, education, housing statistics, and access to country. There has to be a sense of how this whole of society takes responsibility for restoring those injustices. But our teaching and advocacy also has to rest around, well, our relations with all these non-human species and areas of country and sacred sites or places or species that live nowhere else in the world, the only place in the world where they flourish. We have to get people to care as passionately as we do. You know, Australia has the worst species extinction rate in the world, you know, and you hear people say Australia's a wealthy country. And I like to correct people on that and say Australia isn't a wealthy country. It's been an extremely greedy country for 200 years that's raped and pillaged rather than adopted good, sustainable environmental management systems. And that can be confronting for people, you know. It's confronting in my own life sometimes when I look at my own did I forget my recyclable cup today, will I still buy a coffee even though I didn't, you know. And then you go, what are you committing to, you know, like we all are in little ways in our life every day, but then there's those big things, and you just come back to those old teachings and you slow down. And that fundamental philosophy, if you look after country, country will look after you. And it's important that we seed hope in our own communities, that we can grow our young people strong and to hold space, and also in the wider communities, that it's really important to seed hope with young people who are facing high levels of eco-grief, fear about, you know, climate change and all of those issues, and understanding that we can't, this system of believing that we're there, this wealthy country, that you can take, and there'd be no end to it. You see on the news when they do their financial reports about this never-ending growth. I mean, those things are a form of brainwashing that benefit, you know, handfuls of wealthy corporations or peoples at the expense of, you know, numerous species that have become extinct and are on the threat of extinction, a way of life that's just simply not sustainable into the future. And it also, you know, what we see at the moment with this great space race being about, oh, our resources are running out here, so we'll just go to space and rape and pillage there. Well, our people have held for thousands of generations our relationship between Mother Earth and Father Sky, which means our relationships with the planet system. We have creation stories, you know, and they're different all over Aboriginal Australia, you know, but we have creation stories that link us with the moon, with the sun, with Venus, with Mars, Yuan-ji, you know, Yuan, the constellation of Yuan in the sky, that whole big name, you know, when it comes at a certain time of year, and its association with the belt made from a possum thing that only the aunties in the old days can give to the warrior man. There's whole lots of traditions, different families. Hold in relation to that and to those planets. And we also have sites where it's mapped on country, and Brill Lake here, you know, when you take away all the night lights, is a mirror in the sky for when you can see in the clear water some of the constellations reflected in the lake, in the sky. There are beautiful places. So it's a treasure. If I had my way, I'd convince everyone to say we're going to reduce our light use so we can watch this and treasure the lake in this way. You know, we would still be able to have fun in summer months with some of our water sports that people love doing, but in the winter and in the bird nesting seasons, you know, we'd keep all of those activities away from where the fish are sort of breeding and nesting and where the birds are nesting, and just keep that as a no-go zone until it's out of its breeding cycle and resting cycle. So they're all things we have to learn.
Because it's about knowing those cycles and knowing what's happening for you to be able to understand. Now you can't do that because this is what's happening. But if you have no idea and no connection, you don't even know they're there, you get out on your big jet ski and you are damaging it. But I guess it's more that the more we understand what animals and the time of year and what's happening.
Yeah, and those cycles. So we have seasonal cycles, we understand the calendar year. It's nearly my birthday in a couple of weeks, so I understand that's a calendar year sort of event.
Yeah.
But it's a seasonal event. And then what we need to learn more about then is our astronomical events, because they link, like the moon affects the tides, our planets, and there's ancient traditions and stories that teach of that. And we see all these wonderful festivals like Vivid in Sydney, where that has the highest population in Australia, so there's that sort of festival here. But here, I can still see beautifully the clarity of some of our night sky constellations. When you step out at night time, there's still lights, but there's not so much pollution yet where our vision has become impaired. We can still, even though there's lights, the channels here and people's houses are reflecting on the water, and street lights on, I can still see some of the constellations like I did when I was little. And the beauty of that, and the treasure of that, and that country itself is the writing of our creation ancestors. So the lake, before Cook sailed up here, thousands of people would come for ceremonies, and this ecosystem here could feed everyone for those big gatherings, and then people would go again.
Because it would replenish.
To learn those teachings and share those teachings, and big ceremonial trade gatherings like market sort of systems, like big festivals and parties and gatherings at certain times of the year, and bring resources that were needed. Yeah, I've really gone between Mother Earth and Father Sky. The possum drum opens that connection, And, of course, when we think about the possum, then we can't not but think about the trees. That's why I chose this particular pelt and drum and story today, is because, the possum lives in the trees like many animals, and we need our old trees, that have those old hollows, the big goannas have to have somewhere to go and sleep when the log falls on the ground in winter when they're hibernating, or some of our, like the glossy black cockatoo here around the lake, there's families around the lake here, and we know that's one of the species that's on the watch list as well. But there's thousands of orchids and insects and other animals that people might not be as excited about. People tend to be excited about things like the whales, but how much passion can we draw out of people to get them excited about the krill? Which is, if there's no krill, that's the end of the whales as well. So some of those relationships in ecosystems
are really important because the creation ancestors made country that way.
Mm.
So our job then is to observe, much like scientists, and the old people did that over thousands of generations, observe, watch, listen, hear what's happening. And then they're the seasonal cycles. So it might be at the end of August or it might be midway through spring. It's not about the calendar date, it's about what's happening with these species relationships, you know, that can signal these things. And of course, what we're seeing in these modern times and what everyone is feeling, even doubters are starting to recognise, you know, we're being taught something as humans, very important that we need to listen to, excuse me, is Mother Earth has alarm bells as well.
Mm.
And while we do have floods or we have droughts or we have different aspects, the intensity of human created climate change, because there's a difference between, we know, the Ice Age and different things, but there's a human created climate change, which is about our pace of consumption, our distancing and disconnection from knowing where our resources are coming from, or from the pace with which we can, if we're wealthy enough to go to the shop and buy something, when we know around the world different people have different relations. We know in some of our communities the gap between people's lifestyles by some Australians and by many of our communities and other communities as well, it's not just our communities, that there's a huge gap, that some of these systems have broken down.
I think an interesting thing you were talking about before is that totem system and how that, maybe you could explain a bit how that works and how that helps kind of look after different species and look after nature.
Yeah, so the totem system as a form of conservation management.
Mm.
So I said before that I don't work with roo skins. There's a lot of people who make kangaroo skins. So buru or patikarang, buru. So there's a mob of kangaroo and some little wallabies that come to my home here and live in and about here. The wallabies are a shire. And but the roos, like if I'm having a sad day, they come round, right up around the house, you know, and we'll hang out. But mostly they come here at night time if there's parties going on in the neighbourhood and they can hear a lot of noise. They're right beside the window.
Yeah.
Like they've come for protection.
Yeah.
Because they're not sure about this sound. It's not the normal sound they hear. And then other times they run away. They run away pretty quick. But the mothers, when their joeys are at the stage of them leaving the pouch and the mothers are trying to not let them back in the pouch because, you know, they've become too big and really they're on their own now, they like to come round here to, so that they have a little bit of extra support as well. I mean, they've got the whole bush to run off into and they do run off into the whole bush as well, but they'll come here and we'll just have those moments together where the little Joey can practice running. So it's like I say, I'm running my daycare for them to get stronger on their hopping skills.
Yeah.
And that's a really joyful and happy time for me. But I know it's also joyful for them because even though these are wild, you know, I don't feed them.
Yeah.
I put water out and that's it, you know, and if they were injured, if there was injured, you know, I only help wild animals if they're injured or, you know, it's times of severe drought or put water out in the heat, you know. So it's that knowing it's relation. They know that they'll be safe with me to have that space if they need that bit of support. And also when my mood is needing some comfort or we're just having some fun, they'll come round and go. I take this great happiness that they have the ability to be free because there's bush and water and country that's safe enough. And they're under danger from cars and invasive species are putting pressure on them. You know, there's foxes. You know, I've seen foxes out here, and there's, you know, people with dogs and cats who come around, and, you know, I've seen cats taking out the birds and stuff. So there's all of these predators for different species that are putting them under threat, and then having the home, they need the home connection, they need the travel pathways. And I know a lot of people care about those relationships as well. But that is then also a system of different people in the, you know, with different totemic systems can or can't, for example, marry different other people, you know, of different clan or totem systems. And what that also does then is ensure that there's people who can make, say, for example, possum cloaks, and people who can make, for example, kangaroo, but also eat the food that's related to that.
Because your totem, you can't injure or harm it.
Yeah. So
you leave that to someone else if you're going to eat that animal.
Yeah. And so you have family totems. You have personal totem. Some people have one. Some people have several, you know. Some people, and then you have family totems that you might get through your mother's line or your father's line, and then you have clan totems, and then you have nation totems. So you often hear people talk about, you know, the black duck, you know, you and the black duck, you know, is really important on that symbol or level. You know, the black swan's really important for a lot of families, you know, different families. Buru, kangaroo, important stage, you know, feeding the food. It's an important food source, but it's also really important for young men and ceremony time for young men and becoming into manhood. In other mobs, you know, in Western New South Wales or in other parts of Australia, they have different relationships, you know, around it.
And you also have protecting that species and caring for it and being connected to it.
Yeah, because if everyone just if it was open slather on everything, then it just wouldn't work. But also then there's someone, part of being human and having the ability to speak is to speak up in the modern world, is for us to speak up for those animals or rights or systems. And so you can know and give permission for people who are possum hunters, you know, or who are this, or, you know, to have that food and have that meal, you know, or to use those resources on your country, but not if it's in time of drought, not if we've just had the worst bushfires on human record in the South Coast. Why are we logging forests that are still providing homes to animals? You know, those sorts of things which are on a scale and on a level of destruction across a whole, the whole, you know, Karawan, Black Summer Bush, you know, on a scale that hasn't been known or seen in human history. You have to make different sets of decisions than you would if we're in times of healthy country and healthy being. In times of abundance, you might be able to host a big gathering and have a big feast. In times of abundance, we might be able to take some materials, you know, to ensure, and preserve for the leaner months coming. But in times of suffering, in times of distress, then your job has to be to take care of and protect. And being with the record extinction rates that we have, with the record, with the issues we're facing as a whole society, as custodians at this point in time, taking care of our relations between Mother Earth and Father Sky, then we have to think differently, and that can become very overwhelming. You can just think, there's so many things, how can I do things? That's why I really encourage you and your listeners that are making these changes at home, in their daily lives, and are raising families who care about spending time, you know, to take the time to plant seeds and see what happens, to grow, to think about those healthy choices in life, and also what that means for our overall connection is really, it's achievable and it's doable in whatever way.
Mm.
They're important in the same ways that those warriors who are called to lobby for fishing rights, Aboriginal fishing rights, for example,
yeah,
and for marine parks and exclusion zones. You know, those people who are holding those spaces is to get behind those organisations. Like today is Clean Up Australia Day, for example, and many of our local organisations, but someone like Treading Lightly, who's in a local organisation, do their monthly tidies every single month, you mm-hmm. know, and go and clean up different places. You know, there are different ways that mm-hmm. non-Aboriginal people can go, I can take responsibility for this little creek here of yeah. removing rubbish, even though it's not rubbish I might have put there, but because I care about this, or I can find out that, you know, this corridor where we've got our sugar gliders, and after the fires they're under threat, and you know, the forest has just been taken, that corridor that links over to there, you know, I can join this group that's protecting them.
Mm.
You know, there are a whole lots of different ways that modern Australians and people who come here can go, we can't individually, you know, there's so many issues, what can I choose? You can choose something that's calling you mm. to care about, and to do it for when you get no direct benefit for yourself.
Mm.
You know, it's okay to get some benefit from growing your food and eating that, but sometimes you do things where it's for decisions made for aren't going to be seen till 8 generations yeah. into the future. Decisions, that's how our old people held council and held our old laws, was thinking, you know, that long into the past, into the future of, we need to see this cycle play out. So for modern Australia, you know, we're in this grandmother law, you know, the 8 generation cycle that will come round, where we're seeing what has the mindset. We've inherited a mindset of the use of country in a certain way.
Mm.
And so our collective challenge is to keep seeding new ways. And we don't have all the answers, because there's a lot more people that live here now, and there's a lot of different pressures.
Mm.
So we have to draw on our old teachings, protect them, we have to protect our country, and then we have to rebalance.
Mm.
And we can do it. You know, I have great faith in the next generations
yeah.
to come up with tools and skills that will keep them raising their voices, but also taking the time to listen.
Well, thank you for taking the time to share all of that and share your knowledge and point of view. And yeah, I've got a lot out of it, and I'm sure people listening will too.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. To find out more about Amanda Reynolds, go to the homepage for this podcast, and you can see images of the cloaks that we're talking about. You can also read the article about her and buy her in issue 30 of Pip Magazine. Go to pipmagazine.com.au, and don't forget to check us out on socials.